Okay, now there is some criticism. There are some points where, you know, this theory fails or it does not apply to the real world. So there's been a lot of appreciation, though. It's a famous theory. In fact, you know, being in the human resource and the L&D field, I was made aware of this theory as early as 2005. Correct? So this particular theory is quite famous, quite popular. But again, it has got its own criticism when it comes to the context of wages. Now, researchers, they have proved that there is a lack of hierarchical structure as suggested by Maslow. So not every individual, you know, is following that. Correct? Some people, despite having no shelter, are self-actualized. If you look at some sadhus, okay, some saints, they don't have anything as a permanent house, or they don't live in a society, they live in the mountains, yet they have loads of wisdom. So these things can actually not realize in a structured way. Some people are truly wise without any sort of a training, or they have not yet, you know, have attained those particular levels in an organization where they would also reach a self-esteem, but yet they do have those. So it's not necessary, according to people, to graduate slowly into those particular levels as suggested by Maslow. There's another piece of criticism. Some people may be derived of their lower levels, okay? But some people may be have deprived of their lower levels, but still strive for self-actualization needs. So especially in the Oriental, the Indian cultures, there is no need for us to gain materialistic pleasures first, satisfy them, and then move ahead. There are lots of prominent examples in India where they have not really been given the basic pleasures of life. Okay, like they don't have delicious food to eat, they don't live in a palatial apartments, yet they are self-actualized. All right, so they may starve, they may have, you know, they might not have the best of luxuries, but yet they are at a higher level of thinking. Now, the next theory has been proposed by Herzberg, another behavioral scientist. Okay, and this particular scientist has extended the work of Maslow. He's come up with a theory called as a two-factor theory of what motivates people at work. So as the name goes, there are two factors or two categories. One is known as an intrinsic set of factors, and the other one is known as an extrinsic set of factors. So these are the two important factors when it comes to the theory that has been proposed by Herzberg. So let's go ahead and discuss this in further detail. As you can see, the intrinsic factor, okay, or the intrinsic remuneration are motivators or satisfiers, okay, which work for satisfying workers related to the job content. So Herzberg suggests that the organizations can utilize three distinct methods to increase. So job content means, what do you do on the job? What does your job entail? What is the role that you are supposed to play at the job? All right. So is that motivating enough for you to go ahead and do it properly, regularly, and retain your job in the same organization? Now, in order to increase this drive or motivation, he has proposed three important components or measures. The first measure is the job enlargement. All right. So job enlargement could entail including more challenging elements into the job. It could entail some particular delegating activities, or it could entail you catering to more needs. The next one is the job rotation. So if you are working in a particular department for a relatively long period of time, can you take on new challenges, a new ecosystem, a new department by being moved out of your current department or role? So this can come in the form of a rotation. For example, if you've been working for a very long period in HR, can you move to another function? Like, let's say, recruitment and selection, if that is a distinct function. Correct? The next one is job enrichment. Can you do some things which are more challenging? Maybe you are transferred to some place which is a better opportunity. You have been given further challenges. Maybe you might also be promoted due to that. So these are three intrinsic motivational factors which may provide enhancement in perceiving the job that an employee does. Now, what are certain extrinsic remuneration factors? And these are also known as the hygiene factors, and they help to reduce the dissatisfaction on the job. So the initial ones were the motivational factors. Now these ones are known as the hygiene factors. Now these include aspects like the company's rules and regulations, the SOPs, the SLAs, the administrative practices, supervision practices, the coordination, the structure of the salary, the presence of conflict or absence of it, the interpersonal relationships, the working environment, the job security, and aspects pertaining to the personal life. So these are aspects where people could get dissatisfied. For example, a toxic working environment. Let's work with a very simple example. A toxic work environment where we have a boss who judges us constantly. We've got senior employees who are always developing a groupthink when it comes to developing a consensus. There are no options available for a job rotation. You are always supposed to work in overtime. There are conflicts in politics at every level. So here what would happen is these would be unhygienic conditions for a person to work in. Just imagine the supervisor are not adding any value to you. Your job is a hire and fire. There is a provision for you to be fired anytime if your performance is not good. So these are all factors which lead to dissatisfaction, and people try and move out for a better job with more hygiene factors. So the presence of these and, you know, the levels of satisfaction being high or positivity being high would lead to retention. If not, there would be a turnover or attrition because of these factors, which could be sort of demotivation factors on the job. So here are, you know, certain factors which have been listed again. So we've already seen these particular aspects. All right, salaries, the wages, this is the structure, the administration. So we've already worked with this. Another one could be a work-life balance, as I'd mentioned. If there's all work and no play, if the company, you know, expects you to work long hours, they might remunerate you, they might compensate you, but at the expense of your family. So if you have young children at home and you enjoy their company, and you begin work at 7 o'clock and you end work at 8 o'clock, and commuting takes you another 1 hour. And by the time you reach your home, what happens? Your child has gone to sleep. So you're missing the company of the child for a good 6 days in a week. Sometimes you're supposed to come on a Sunday to work as well. So you've essentially missed out on all those lovely moments that could have been spent with the child, and this topples the work-life balance and becomes a factor of dissatisfaction. Now, what would an employee do in such a case? An employee might look for another opportunity with a different organization where they don't encounter this particular factor as a hygiene factor or a dissatisfaction. So the organization, in a sense, has to think on these lines. So they have to understand that employees might have a family and that they might need to, in the due course of the day, also spend some time with the family, right? Now, these are the factors which are for motivation, yeah? And then we'll cover these aspects as well. So here we have already seen these factors. Some of them are purely taken from, the earlier model, from the model of Maslow. So we've seen these factors. Okay. Now, when in place these factors result in, now this is very important. This is what I spoke of some time back. When these hygiene factors are taken care of by the organization, essentially what happens? That there is a general wave of satisfaction. Just imagine a worker going home at 8 o'clock in the night, reaching home, finding his young child asleep, not able to do anything about it, vis-a-vis a worker who reaches home at 6:30 and still has a good 1.5 hour to play with the child, to interact with his family, to watch a soap or a family drama in the evening and unwind. So prevention of dissatisfaction happens over here. Now what happens here? High motivation, because these are all positive aspects, high satisfaction and a strong commitment. So retention can happen at a better rate than in the places where these factors seem to be absent. Okay, so now we'll look at the application here of this particular content theory, the two-factor theory. So one application for the Herzberg's theory of motivation that isn't well known is importance in managing of quality. So here it's very important that if products are to be created in a quality, the workers need to be happy. So if there is an absence of unhygienic factors and there's a presence of motivational aspects, then the resulting products would also be of a good quality, right? Yeah. So he equates the reliability or the R factor of a product as being the hygiene factor, correct? So if the hygiene factors are in place and there's no dissatisfaction, a worker would work conscientiously on the product or service. Yeah. For example, if you have hired a driver for your car, yeah, and the driver is happy, he's happy to go home at 6 o'clock every day, and he is completely focused on giving you the best service. He drives the car as if it's his own car. He is in turn reliable. Yeah, the service that he's providing is also of a good quality. So here, if the hygiene factor is being cared for, we are taking care of small things like work-life balance, things like remuneration of this person, he will provide us with a higher reliability. The S factor, all right, so there's another factor, the S factor. The motivator refers to the product features. So the people will diligently work and look at every aspect of a product created. Their focus, their attention will be in the product, correct? So they will show further reliability or diligence in creating a robust product than otherwise. So you already have a base hygiene, an R factor, and built on that R factor is the next factor, which is the S factor, which adds more quality or value to the product being created. Now there's some criticism as well for this particular theory. So the two-factor theory or the Herzberg's theory is still to this date holding. Now if you see, it still makes sense. So if I'm a founder of a company, I will always look at how do I minimize dissatisfaction in hygiene and how do I maximize motivation? Yeah, in the motivation factors, however, though its existence, there have been some critics. The first critic is that the two-factor theory assumes that happy employees produce more. Now, this may not be the case in the real world. Just imagine if a person is very happy, they might also lose focus on what's happening. So they are way too happy, they are content, and this may lead to some sort of complacency as well. Okay, another thing is each individual is made or created differently. So what motivates one individual might be the reason for a demotivation for another individual. Like if you might have read in the social media and many prominent papers a couple of years ago before the pandemic, young people So the youngsters, especially in the age range of 22 to 27, they used to stay back in companies like Infosys, in companies like Accenture, the ones which have a lovely cafeteria, they have a games room, they have free food available in their canteens or their pantries. These young individuals, they stayed back, very interesting, huh? They stayed back even after their work, they stayed back for a couple of hours, they used to play nice chess in the AC because their homes did not have an AC. Maybe their homes had other people living who went for a contact center job at about 9 o'clock. So till 9, it was a cramped place. So they would stay back, they would enjoy the free food, they would have a gaming session, a challenge with others, they would enjoy the free internet, and they would go home late. So essentially they would go home at about 9, 9:30 when the contact center people who shared the room went to their work. Now, essentially, this would have not been the same thing with the story which I told you earlier. The young worker who's got a young child, he or she wants to go home early. So not every individual might be motivated. So if we tell the individuals who stay back to go home early, this might be a cause of concern, and vice versa. So it does not account for individual attributes or traits that could provide a different response to a motivator or a hygiene factor. So a lot needs to be done to make this more robust. Now there is then another theory, the third content theory, called as the ERG theory. It's the work of Adlerfer, or as his name goes, Clayton Adlerfer, and he's identified three groups of core needs what we aspire as an employee, as a human: existence, relatedness, and growth. So essentially what this is stating is the same roti, kapda and makan, and a head. So a head meaning the needs for a society recognition, self-esteem, and actualization. So the existent needs are concerned with survival. Yeah. So these are those needs which are the basic needs that we generally seem to possess. The relatedness, or synonymously known as the connected needs, they point out to the interpersonal and social relationships. Like some people, they always ask somebody else, hey, are you on LinkedIn? Hey, are you on Facebook? Hey, do you have an account on Instagram? Yeah, so that is keeping in with the times. So this is known as connectedness in the new age era. The growth needs, the last ones, are concerned with individuals' intrinsic desire for personal development. So they might be, doing meditation, they might be having a yoga session in the morning, some health related aspects, they might have a book which they're currently reading, to reach a level of self-actualization, which may be useful in their personal or their professional or both lives. According to this gentleman, Adlerfer, the needs aren't in any specific order, unlike the needs hierarchy that we had seen in the Abraham Maslow hierarchy model. And any desire to fulfill a need can be activated at any random point in time. So let's suppose I just open my Instagram and I see a lovely quote from somebody and I would like to explore more. So I click on the page and I get a few more. So I continuously, I read that and my need for growth is satisfied. Then I see somebody who wants to connect with me, maybe a participant in my session, an old friend, and my need for relatedness clicks. Okay, so these needs, they can arise any moment of time, which is completely logical, to think about. Now, this particular theory can actually be utilized as a frustration regression principle. Please read it together. No? We should read it together, team or students. So frustration regression principle, where an already satisfied lower level need can be reactivated. So this is known as a regression. Regression basically means going back or reverting to an earlier state. So like progression, there also can be a regression. Okay, when confronted with the impossibility of satisfying a higher need level. So let's suppose, I'll give you an example. On hearing meditation, you say, okay, you know what? Professor Kamath is mentioning about meditation. Let me also try it to satisfy a higher need. And you begin from tomorrow. For the next a good 10 days, you're trying it, but it's not happening. So what do? You again regress and you say, you know what? Just let that be. Maybe I would try it later. Let me first focus on relatedness. Let me see if somebody in my circle is doing it and what do they have to say about it. So you might be frustrated because of your inability and you might just regress to an earlier. So you move to connected or relatedness if the growth need is not being met. So here we draw a comparison between the two theories, content related, Maslow's and Adelfer's. Okay. So here we look at Adelfer's and Maslow. Over here we look at from the bottom if we see. So these are the existential safety needs and physiological needs fit into existence. Self-esteem and social needs fit into relatedness. And the actual growth need corresponds to self-actualization, as I had mentioned some time back. So you might just want to pause the video for a moment. You might just want to, you know, look at it again, think from your own perspective, slow down, and then you can, play the video again. Now we will work with a bit more discussion on the Adelfer's ERG theory. So on a work level, so this till this moment in time, we also looked at it from a personal aspect, but on specifically on a work level, this means that managers must recognize their employees' multiple simultaneously arising needs. So I cannot assume that a newly joined employee may only have the first existential need. Maybe they are already in their college programmed as a competent individual who knows fully well. An example, I was working with a renowned IT company who had inducted professionals as a part of their system. So I was grooming them for collaboration, for agile practices, for being competent professionals. And I got to know that they already had tons of knowledge on these practices. They had, in fact, they had covered their E, they had covered their R, and they were all into the G. So over here, it is very important for us managers, trainers, developers to understand that they might not just be working at one level, they might have simultaneous or parallel running needs. And how do we satisfy them? So in this model, focusing exclusively on one need at a time will not motivate the people. Just imagine people who have graduated out of an IIM, okay, or they've done their post-graduation from some reputed organization. Just imagine, a manager who's not aware will not be able to motivate them. So we need to take a look at this according to ERG model. Now, again, we revisit the principle of the frustration regression. So this is a principle which impacts workplace motivation. So ideally what happens is, okay, if there are no growth opportunities, and this happens majorly in a lot of organizations. So I, a long time ago was conducting a leadership development program for a prominent electronics manufacturing organization where there were complaints that there was boredom, there was apathy, and there was like an indifference in the employees towards work because they were not getting those opportunities. So just imagine an M.Tech doing a clerical job. So what happens is there was a regression from the growth needs to relatedness. So there was more of a social kind of a bonding. They used to go to office to meet their colleagues only to while away time. Yes. So there was more of socializing than any specific growth aspect over there. Now there's some criticism as well, which is associated with the ERG theory. So according to some critics, not only for this theory, but all the need or the content theories, they are based on number of human needs and relationships between them, which essentially are very complex. And they cannot just be defined within these few frameworks. So essentially what happens is they are good as theories, but they do not have wide implications, or they are not flexible. So they are not very good for policies and practices which can create a difference for an organization. Now we will look at the next theory type, which is known as the process theories. And an important one here is known as the expectancy theory. Yeah. So there was a behavioral scientist by the name of Victor Vroom who developed the expectancy theory under the process theory based on an abstract of three things. One is a valence, one is expectancy, and one is instrumentality. Now what are these? We will look at in the upcoming slides. So let's first discuss the concept of valence. Now what is valence? Valence states to an individual's orientation for a result. How aligned, how oriented are they towards a specific result? For example, you know, a supervisor wanting to become a manager in a manufacturing concern, a lead developer wanting to become a project manager in an IT agile environment. So these are the specific needs and the individual's orientation to that particular need or result. So this is called as a valence. The next concept in Victor Vroom's theory is instrumentality, which refers that a person would be inspired to give better performance in anticipation of promotion. So is there an instrument which makes this particular orientation tighter? Like let's say if you are promised a promotion in the next quarter, if you produce X number of parts or if you provide something which is a better model, okay, or if you do well with some of your people, if you are able to recruit, let's say recruitment team, they have a target of 50 individuals on a niche technology and you are able to complete that. Now what happens? You are promised a promotion and you're given. So this is known as instrumentality. And the last one is the expectancy, which denotes that the degree of chances according to a particular activity or process or effort will lead to particular first level results on the other hand. Okay. So what are those chances or probabilities? If you do something, like let's say you run a collaboration workshop and people stop working in silos and start working in teams. So what is the probability is known as the expectancy. Can you expect a tighter connect? So what is your expectancy? Is it high or is it low? Is what is covered here. So we have a pictorial representation over here as to how these particular factors can be interpreted. So as you can see, the effort. So here we are developing a sort of an interpretation where we are looking at these three factors coming together. Yeah. So the manpower gives to the organization what it needs from the people, higher performance, and in exchange they expect promotion. So here the effort, okay, there's a question here in the expectancy. Will my effort lead to a high performance? So consider a supervisor, consider a new GET, consider an existing manager asking themselves this question. So they have a certain expectancy from the system. Now, the next factor is the instrumentality, which is the performance itself. Will performance lead to outcomes? So if I follow this training, if I follow this methodology, if I follow this particular technique, will it lead to my alignment or outcome? And then finally, the valence, which is the reward. Do I find the outcomes desirable? So is my promotion as expected by my own self? Correct? So this makes it as the valence. Now, of course, there is criticism as with the other theories. And one of the major ones is that this is an extremely simple motivational model. Yeah. So there are a lot of complexities which have been excluded from this model. There is also the assumption that a reward will entice an employee to expand greater efforts in order to obtain the reward, but neglect the fact that the reward in question could have a negative effect. So for example, if they're only working towards a specific aspect and they're forgetting other things, they're only working for a promotion there, but they're forgetting that that promotion may lead them to have a reduced knowledge that they used to work on the previous job. So if it's like a technical person gaining quick knowledge about the job but has to sacrifice that if he becomes a manager, so he or she will not be able to work on that niche technology. So in this case, the reward will not be meaningful. It could have a negative effect. So a technical person who can progress to become an architect or somebody who's great in the technical world can suddenly diverge and move into management and would need to look at the administrative aspects of other people. They would completely subside their technical capabilities in this case. Thank you.